Hey everyone, welcome to the Gist Podcast.
If you're tired of being comfortable and want to take on living life from the context of 100% fuck yeah,
join us each week as we share lessons we're experiencing in this crazy game called life.
We invite you to play along and get your shit together.
Take responsibility for how your life is currently going, and at the same time, take on new, fun, and sometimes crazy shit.
We promise to challenge your thinking by being vulnerable, authentic, and straight up with what we're dealing with, what doesn't work, and what can.
Be warned, this is not your grandma's podcast.
All right. Episode 13.
Fatherhood.
Of the Gist Podcast. Yes, fatherhood. You're a father, I'm a father. In various levels, like different cycles, right? My kids are six. I have twin boy and girl, 6 years old.
It's such a cop-out that you get to say my kids are six.
I know, right?
Like, how old are your kids? Six.
It throws people.
Yeah, they go,
what do you mean?
Didn't you say plural? Didn't you say kids?
Now, the real quick ones are like, oh, you got twins.
Yeah, exactly. People just don't think twins. 8 and 10. But we both have the boy and girl dynamic.
Yeah, that's right. So this morning, we're going to talk about what it means to be father and all the nuances and experiences that we have as a father and what we make of it, I would say.
Yeah. And being a man.
Be a man.
The often, how do I even say that? Being a man is a real mind fuck sometimes, especially in this world that we live in with, hyper feminism. Believe me, I'm like so behind women, but there's a lot of that party that is actually just male bashing. It's not actually feminism. It's not supportive in building a foundation.
Well, it's the other extreme.
It's not a growth and strength platform for women. It's bashing men. But just any culture in general with men, I mean, you find out, at least how it occurs, you find out pretty quickly as a boy that like you don't matter much. Do you know what I mean? Mm. And then your role as that translates as a father is interesting because I'm trying to empower my son and also empower my daughter and have them recognize what it is to be a good man and what it is to be a strong lady and how to associate yourself with a good man.
Mm.
Right.
Yeah.
There's all that. That program is constantly running and it starts at a very young age for boys and girls. Did I get heavy?
I was just going to say, this is going to be an episode that both of us will get triggered in one way or another. Like there will be something there that's just like, it's pushing that little part that really, no, don't like it, right? And that's good. That's what this is all about.
Yeah.
I want to – there is two sides to the coin, right?
Absolutely.
What it means to be a man and finding your masculine energy and what it means to be a woman and really owning your feminine energy and the reality of it being that both of us, men and women, have both masculine and feminine energy. And we tend to in society, and this is the bone of contention,
mm-hmm.
that is unseen for the most part, an overpowering masculine energy and an overpowering feminine energy.
Well, because it's not okay for you to be masculine as a female and it's not okay for you to be feminine as a man.
Right.
And of course, I'm speaking, what's that word I'm looking for? I don't believe that. That's the message.
That's the construct. There. That's the status quo in that space.
Yeah. Like, you know, as a man, you're supposed to be brave and you're not supposed to be afraid and you're not supposed to show weakness. And none of those things are human. Like, there is a time to be strong and be brave and all those other things. But I think the real strength inside of being brave and courageous is that you are afraid and it's okay. But you're fear is never absent. It's the ability to take action while fear is present that makes the difference, right?
Yeah, it's the yin to their yang.
Mm.
You can't have bravery without fear, because then you just have arrogance, and that's where some of the world's biggest problems have come from.
Ego.
Yeah. Now it's an ego play.
Yeah. Do you experience this as a father? So your kids were born, right? Yeah. And you've had kids and now they're six.
Mm-hmm.
And do you ever just, for me, it could happen anytime. It could happen when I wake up in the morning. It could happen. It could hit me in the middle of the day where I go, holy fuck, I'm a dad and I've got these little people and I'm like responsible for them. And the shit that I do and the decisions that I make are going to have a dramatic impact on these little people. Whoa.
I try and not make that mean too much when it does show up.
No.
Because it can go in a pretty...
Totally.
It can derail, right? Like, oh my God, I can't believe I did that thing, and that's gonna be the thing that scars them.
Yeah.
Like, that's a story that I make up. It's like that thing that I just did. That word that I used yesterday evening, prime example, mm-hmm. my little girl threw the pillows over the edge of the top of the stairs, mm-hmm. and knocked a picture off the wall.
Right.
And broke the picture frame.
Right.
And I like lose it.
Yeah.
Not to the extreme, but it's like, that was a really stupid thing that you did.
Yeah.
And you really should have thought about what might have happened if you were going to throw those over.
Yeah.
Instead of just throwing them over. And of course she got upset by it and started to cry about it. Like afterwards, Isabella tends to just kind of hold on to it a little bit, try to pretend to be strong. And then the minute you ask about it, it just like releases the floodgates.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it's right away that what's there for me is, way to go, Dave. Another thing to add to the list that is going to traumatize your child. And to navigate that is not easy and is never ending.
Yeah.
And a bit relentless at times.
You know, I think I can totally relate to that. And it's funny because there's a balance where you're like, hey, don't do that. That's pretty dumb. To... wow, good for you for like searching and discovering stuff and realizing that was pretty dumb. Mm. So there's like a really delicate balance in there where you're trying to let them, you know, explore and discover for themselves. But then there's the fact that you're also still a human being and you didn't do anything wrong. You just did a human thing. But yeah. I think what separates you, and dare I say myself, from a lot of other humans in general, but dads in particular, because like I said, unfortunately, on a lot of level, humans just have a lot of programs going on, but as men, we face our own challenges. But I think the thing that separates you from a lot of people is that you actually have the ability to go back and look at that and go, oh, that was not, you're consciously aware of those. You're not just a loose cannon that's, you know, one minute I'm good and then something bad happens, then I'm like up here and then I'm, you know what I mean? You're not out of control that way. And then when you do, we all lose our shit. But at least you have the ability to look back on it.
And I think that is so in the topic of patience, there is a patience for what happens with them and an allowing of patience to happen. Reading, for example.
Mm.
Reading is a really interesting dynamic because I know how to read. And I know how to read really well.
Yeah.
And you, what can show up really quickly is you're not reading fast enough.
Mm-hmm.
You're taking too long.
Mm-hmm.
You're not doing what you know to do, which is to sound out the letters of the word in order to read the word. You're guessing.
Oh, the guessing thing drives me up the fucking wall, man. You want to talk about testing your patience?
Oh, man.
The reading, I can totally relate because... from a, like we homeschool, so it's like
I dip my hat to you in respect and a bit of like you're fucking crazy because I'm clear I don't have the headspace for that type of engagement. It takes a lot, man. It takes a lot to help my kid to be present. It's not even helping my kid, it's to be present with either of them when they're reading and at the same time, managing the conversation in my own mind about what how it's going and whatever.
Mm.
Let alone having the dynamic of doing that every day across multiple topics, most of which I probably would have very little interest in. So on top of that, I got to now show you this that I don't really care about and having to deal with that thing. It's like, I just couldn't imagine. So hats off to you, man, for doing that.
Well, I mean, I appreciate that, but I don't think I deserve the praise.
All right, well, I'll take it back.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, I'm no different. And obviously, my wife does a bulk of that work. I just think that maybe it's even different because we homeschool. Like, they're not in a school all the time because they do go to school for whatever, once a week and then a second day every other week for like 5 hours. But I think kids that are in school full time, it's a totally different dynamic because with my kids, I might be home during the day or sometime in the evening. Like I'm constantly, we're always looking for opportunities and it just shows up out of nowhere to teach them. It's like my son, he'll have his game on and be like, oh dad, what does this say?
The questions, dude. Oh my God, the questions. So we create this environment of you ask as many questions as you want.
Yeah.
Cause I get that this is where you're at in life. You are curious about everything.
Yeah.
The timing of those questions are usually
it's the timing that's
not good timing. Like I would say 9 times out of 10, the question's not good timing. And so I get to manage and just to segue into the other topics, we got a few topics that we want to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
It is my responsibility to answer that question to the best of my ability.
Mm-hmm. Patience is the overlying
fundamental
entire thing.
Yeah.
Because you have a huge amount of responsibility. But even in that moment, you need to be patient and like realize, oh.
And I get so triggered by some of these questions. Like, you fucking ask that? Who gives a shit is the thing in my head.
Right? Yeah, man. Totally. Because you got to manage your own emotions. What I get is, you already fucking know that. Why are you asking me? You know
I
always that.
I usually push it back. Well, what do you think?
Me too.
But even that gets... I don't know.
I look at my son and I go, Aeneas, what is it? And he goes, oh, whatever it might be. This one. I'm like, yeah. I'm like, have confidence, buddy. Like, you got this. Why are you asking? You know that already. You already know that. So
it's validation.
Just, yeah, yeah. So it's funny because you start to realize like how I get super freaked out like you. I'm like, how bad am I fucking with my kids? Because I realize that like most people are walking around with the emotional intelligence of a 10-year-old if they're lucky.
Hmm.
I mean, think about it. I mean, we've seen each other lose our shit. So you lose your shit. Everybody does it. And then you're basically, if you're observing it and you're unattached and you watch an adult like have a temper tantrum, short of throwing themselves on the floor and fucking crying, they're literally having a temper tantrum. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They get hijacked and then they leave the room and they're just fucking losing it, right?
No holds barred. So there's a responsibility that we have to take on the game that is fatherhood. Let's talk about what you really enjoy about it. So what is it about fatherhood that is so worth, makes it so worthwhile?
Mm. It's funny because my ADD brain here is like 40,000 different things went through my head when you were talking about that. Cause I instantly brought myself back to the whole masculine feminine thing and how I was like, it's funny how it takes you over quick. Cause I was thinking, oh dear, I'm going to get emotional. And I'm like, well, what's wrong with that?
Right. There is nothing wrong with it. And that is the game, really.
There's nothing wrong with it, you know? So, but man, like I could go on and on. I'm just trying to.
Give me your top three.
Yeah.
The things that just like make all that other shit worthwhile.
Totally. You know what? One thing that is super subtle and has a huge impact, particularly with my daughter, but either of them, but just looking into their eyes. I look at her eyes and I'm just like amazed because she's so she's my kid, so she's like the best, right? But she's just so beautiful and smart and witty, and she's like funny. She's a funny kid, and there's so much purity in their eyes and so much, you know what I mean, that's still there at 8 and 10. And but it's also funny because if you see a kid half their age, they have more of that. You can see that even at 8 and 10, some of that purity has been beaten out of them through just their own experiences in life. But just looking into their
eyes. Reality is setting in.
Yeah, totally.
In their way.
Oh, it's not like a playground. The world's not a playground. Another thing that we do is we play a lot of games. Or we'll just like even, we watch a lot of old TV shows from like when we were growing up. And I just get a huge kick out of it because now I'm an adult watching the show and I get a whole different context for all the jokes and everything. But they love it and they're laughing and it's so fun. But we'll just sit around and play games and tell jokes. And me and my son and my daughter in particular, we'll just sit around and laugh and tell jokes. And it's like the best thing ever. Hmm. Like nothing else really matters, you know, in that moment. So
you talk about the best thing ever. The kids at some point in their early childhood, I'd say around three and a half, four, when they started to talk, they created this thing called the best day ever.
Oh, that's right. You're telling me about that.
So when a whole bunch of blankets are on the floor, pillows and blankets, like when we're making the bed, they come screaming into the bedroom because they see it in some way and they jump in, right? And they're yelling, best day ever. And they're in the pillows and the blankets and they're rolling around and they're giggling. And I don't know where it came from, but it still sticks, right? There, every time there's a bunch of blankets on the floor, they'll come careening into the bedroom and mess it all up, and it's the best day ever.
Yeah.
The other thing I'd say at the highest level that I really adore is, and this has been something that I've been very proactively, I'm very conscious and proactive about, affection, physical touch, and but. When my little boy, in around that same age, 3-4 years old, something inside of him, the masculine side of him, which for, had it that to be affectionate was a weird thing. Mm. I never created it for him because I'm not that way. And so in noticing that, I made sure I've ramped up that piece of it, right? That it's actually okay. And he continues to manage and deal with this thing like hugging or giving mom a kiss or whatever, right? It's like, I kind of don't want to do it right now. Mm-hmm. So you honor that and that's fine, but it's the reminder of that it's actually okay and important to be affectionate and to receive affection. Mm-hmm. Like it's healthy for you. And he does that and he does it of his own free will. Isabella's, she's just a little cuddle monkey. It's like, it's easy for her. Mm-hmm. And for Diego, it comes in waves, and it's usually revolved around the beard, funny enough. Mm. So this is one of the reasons why I have the beard for as long as I have is what it does, like the connection that it's made with my kids.
Right.
They're constantly touching and constantly playing with it. Diego like rubs his face up against it. I feel like the beard is a catalyst for affection.
Yeah, it's something it's got that
some magical powers.
Something that probably brings them comfort. Like it makes them, you know, reminds them that they're safe or
whatever. Yeah, totally.
I remember watching this Facebook video where this dad, he shaved off his beard.
I saw that
one. He's like a 3-year-old girl and she's just like losing her shit.
Yeah.
You hit a lot of triggers there for me when you were talking about the affection piece and responsibility, because that's the other thing too, is as parents, we have a huge responsibility to show our kids how to show love and how to receive love and what's right from wrong, and then trying to navigate that world. Because my daughter, that's the thing, like I've caught myself a couple times going, wait a minute, I need to be careful how I react to this very innocent thing that she's doing right now, because I don't want to.
You have a different context for it, maybe.
That's what I mean. Like, yeah. I don't want her, you know, to feel bad or wrong or not understand what I'm... Because she does this thing. It's actually hilarious. I'll be like standing against the wall or the counter or something. And she'll walk up to me and she'll turn around and she'll basically start twerking on my leg. And I'm just sitting there going like, this is so cute and so funny and so innocent. And there's something inside of me going, oh, don't do that. That's not right. That's not okay.
Right.
And I'm just like shutting that off because it's not like she's walking up and being weird.
Well, it's not like she has an understanding of what twerking is.
Exactly. She has no idea. She's just like dancing. And, you know, so there's that kind of thing that you have to navigate when it comes to being affectionate and showing them that it's okay to to be yourself and to have fun. Like the context for that will be created later. It's
inevitable.
Fine, right? And in my kids, like that's one thing that I'm really grateful for because I'm a bit of a softy myself, is it doesn't matter what's going on in the world. You're outside the doors, the confines of your little piece of earth, and you're doing whatever you're doing out there. You're waging war, you're fighting battles, whatever it is, or you're transforming the world. That's great. Regardless of what you dealt with, you get to come home and still be like a superhero.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like
totally.
People that no matter what happens, they just love you and accept you. And they're like super excited to see you, right? And be with you. And fortunately, we've created an environment where affection is a big thing in our house. And my son's, I think he's pretty affectionate, but kind of like what you said, where he comes in waves of it, where he's kind of like one of those empath kids too, where he'll be sitting there and if you can tell, like if energy's tense, he'll be like, Mom, I love you. Dad, I love you. And then he'll just come up and like give his mom a hug and like he can like feel that. It's really interesting. Mm. But yeah, he gets that way sometimes where he's all about the cuddles. Or he doesn't have very many gears. He pretty much, it's 90% of the time, he just wants to crack skulls. Like he wants to box and fight and wrestle. And that's also another thing. My wife, sometimes she sits back and goes, wow. She's like, I don't know how you do it. I don't know how you do it. Because I'll be sitting there having a conversation with her. I'll be in the kitchen. And I'm literally battling these two little monsters the whole time. One's got an arm. The other one's grabbing a leg. Someone's jumping on my back. And I've got to try and manage that. And not hurt either of them or have them crash into each other. And I'm still, you know, they're pulling me and tugging me and doing all this different stuff. Because when they get hurt sometimes, it's hilarious. Because the two of them, they can pretty much take
her
out.
Say, Uncle.
And it's so funny. Like Eliza's trying to lick her face and Mia's is tickling her. Oh, my God.
Oh, that's hilarious. Great. Yeah, that's the beauty of the balance between the husband and the wife and the dynamic and what they get to do. They test their boundaries, right? And you get to create that environment for them. I love that piece as well. It's just so much fun. Here's a thing that I grapple with, and that is managing sadness and crying. Dare I say
it's okay to cry, man.
Let me go there. So as I was raised, and I don't have a whole lot of memory of it, I don't think it was honored very much, like the time to cry for whatever, because I don't honor it very much. Mm. And not to create any fault in how I was raised, I think for the most part, me and my brothers were raised very well and with the high moral standard, what you should do and what you shouldn't do, raised as a Jehovah's Witness, it is your life.
Right? Yeah.
So, but to that, there was a residual effect that occurred with some of the overly strict upbringing. And I feel like sadness and allowing yourself to be with your emotion was not really allowed or encouraged. It was just tough it up, suck it up, because there's no time for that. So that's the thing that I grapple with, is to allow their sadness to be with their sadness and to allow them to be with their sadness, whatever it is. It's a work in progress.
Yeah, I think I have some stuff in there in kind of the same vein where it's almost like they want to cause a breakdown. Like there's something inside them that's not, some need that's not being met. So sometimes I try to communicate that with them. Like I'll try to ask them, like, what do you need right now? Why are you making a big fuss about whatever? You weren't even using an iPad. Like you weren't even thinking about it. And now your brother's using the black iPad and you want to use it now. Like, and then it kind of becomes a more of a big deal. And it's a big deal. And it's this, it's kind of like, why are you, it's like you're trying, what do you need from me right now? It's like you're trying to cause a breakdown. Mm. Like you want me to go over there and take the black iPad from him now and give it to you so that you can have it. You know, it's just, there's those kind of things that I struggle with managing because I'm not really sure how to deal with it. Like I'm not a parent coach, right? I'm like, just happen to be a parent. Sometimes I don't know how to deal with that kind of stuff. I'm like, Eliza, you're not fucking getting it. I don't know what to tell you. Tough luck, man. You know what I mean? Like, if you're sad, then go be sad. Yeah. I don't know what to say to you. But I do ask them, though. Sometimes I'll say, is there something that you need? do you need some love? I ask questions that all the time because I find sometimes you get hold that thought. I think you had something there. Sometimes, you know, you get really busy and they're busy too because they actually have their own friends and events and things going on. And you realize that you haven't actually made time to connect. Mm. And I find sometimes a lot of those breakdowns, those weird ones that are kind of seem like could come out of left field, are driven by some unmet emotional need.
Yeah. So how do you manage? What's been your experience when you get into that mode? And let's say maybe the opportunity isn't optimal to manage a genuine sadness. Like there's something that happened and they are crying about it. Well, how do you manage that?
How do I manage it? You're saying when it's fairly justified or when it's not so much?
I'd say in both cases, and there's this gray area in between where it might be justified, and we really don't need to go there.
Mm.
My story, potentially, but
from
what I can see as an unbiased, as much as I can. Anyways, so not to go on a tangent, but there is degrees of sadness, and it's its own roller coaster.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of how I deal with it. I don't think I have a consistent structure for how I deal with those types of breakdowns. It's almost like an energy thing. It kind of depends on what they're having a breakdown about. Because sometimes it's like, you know, grab them by the shoulders, pick up their chin and say, listen, you can deal with this. Like, this is something you can deal with. You're fine. You know, you're trying to motivate them to get past whatever that thing was. Maybe it was, that's more like when there's a miscommunication between like a friend or a cousin, like they feel bad because that person made them feel bad. And it's like, look, and I just try to remind them, nobody can make you feel bad. You know what I mean? You're going to deal with this your whole life. Someone's not going to like you. They're going to say something or whatever it is. And guess who gets to choose how that makes you feel? That's you. I can't make you feel bad.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, you got this, right? So sometimes there's that. And then sometimes there's just literally the, you know,
big old hug.
Yeah, give them a hug, hold on to them. Kind of like that scene in Dumb and Dumber where where Lloyd Christmas has to cry. Let it out. That's let it all out. All right, that's enough.
That's a great metaphor. Right?
And just to remind listeners that you can hear that we're really just going through some of the progressions that we think about and what we're dealing with in our lives and what we're ongoing joys and struggles of life. And really what we're trying to do here is just authentically share what we're up to and what we're dealing with the intention that you're listening, it makes a difference for you and that you realize you're not crazy. There's just other like people out there dealing with some of the exciting and sometimes ridiculous things that you're dealing with as well.
We really want to thank everybody for listening and taking the time out to listen. We know there's a lot of things vying for your attention and we appreciate that you take this time to listen to us and some of our rants.
And we also want to thank everyone who subscribed to our YouTube channel. Maybe you can just briefly explain
what we're looking to just hit the 100 subscriber threshold on YouTube so that we can get that custom URL. So follow us on Facebook at The Gist and don't forget to subscribe.
Awesome.
Have a great day.